It's time for Arts Live and Local. We are going to have a fabulous weekend, and I know you will too, whether you're here or wherever you are. I'm going to start right out with some music from my first guest, and that is Celtic Traditions from the North Coast Symphonic Band. Yes, I see why the ending is worth hearing. My guest is Dave Becker, the conductor and director of the North Coast Symphonic Band, and they have a concert coming up this Sunday, the 23rd of February, at the Liberty Theater in Astoria. That's 12th and Commercial. And it's a 2 o'clock concert, but there is a pre-show with Hans Araki and Carrie Novotny. And I'm going to turn it over to Dave. Welcome, Dave.
Well, thank you, Carol. It's great to be here.
Yeah.
Yes. North Coast Band is extremely excited and enthusiastic about doing this concert on Sunday. It's a little different than our typical concert in that it's based on a theme that we don't do a lot of Celtic music,
yeah.
but we're doing a whole snootful of Celtic music Sunday.
Is that a Gaelic word?
Yeah,
there?
I don't know. But anyway, and this has been a lot of fun putting together. We've got some great music, and I know people are very excited about having Hans Araki and Carrie Novotny here to perform with us. Primarily, they'll be doing the pre-show, and so mm-hmm. I want to really encourage people to come at 1:30 for the entire pre-show.
Actually, come even earlier because they will be starting at 1:30, right?
Right,
yeah.
Right, yeah.
And I think it's probably open seating, do you know?
Yes.
It is, good. So, yeah, then you get to choose your seats as well.
But this has been fun putting this together because some things about Celtic music work really great for a big symphonic band, and then other things maybe not so well. But so we're trying to use music by composers that have taken these Celtic traditions, Celtic melodies primarily, and put them in, kind of given them their own take. And they still sound very authentic and very Celtic. So that first piece I wanted to play, and I have to admit, in truth in advertising here, that was not the North Coast Symphonic Band performing it, but rather a very, very, very good college band down in Texas. But the piece is called Kirkpatrick Fanfare, and it's kind of got some sort of microcosm of the type of things we'll do throughout our portion of the program. You heard a little bit of kind of Celtic flute-sounding things mm-hmm. and driving rhythms, and then, of course, well-known tunes, O Danny Boy at the end. It's just really all about tunes and rhythm and fun lilting rhythm, dancing and singing. You know.
So are the pieces, and you've got quite a few pieces, you've got nine pieces, and one of them is the Seville Suite. So are some of them quite short then?
Some of these are just 2 or 3 minutes. So then we've got one major work that I do want to really make sure I talk about, because this is the one we're really excited about, and that's Culloden by Julie Giroux.
And okay, I dare you. Go ahead and pronounce these.
These? Oh, I don't know. I'm half Norwegian. There's no Scottish or Irish in me.
I looked at this and I went, uh-oh.
Yeah. But what it means there is that Highland Locks, Bairns, and Heather is pretty obvious. But I hae grot for though I kenned, which is I've wept for those I knew.
Ah.
And this is, of course, Culloden was the bloody battle April 16th, 1746, that was kind of the end of Bonnie Prince Charlie's go at what he was trying to do. And so what Julie's done on this is she's taken, really meticulously researched this, and has taken all sorts of tunes from the mid-1700s. And they're things that will sound real memorable to us. I mean, mm-hmm. they're pieces that we recognize as sounding familiar, but they're all by anonymous composers. And they're all folk tradition.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
so she's not portraying the battle through anything kind of cheesy where, here's where the cannons go off or something. It's not that at all. She's just trying to kind of show it through the tunes that people back then would have been singing, and, it was woven into the fabric of their lives. Then she's made it into a more contemporary sounding piece. But what she says on this is these things are all the songs are about love, war, whiskey, and women. And that's probably what we should have titled
our country
theme.
Western?
Yeah, right. But it's really beautiful. She's got so many.
Who is she?
Great
Who tunes. Is Julie?
She writes a lot for band. Very eminent composer and a real character. She races cars and various things she's a real character. But she's a great writer, and the audience will love this. This has been a big project for us. It's nearly a 20-minute piece, and has lots of emotion in it. But just great, great tunes.
So I know that. I know that at least one or two of your flute players is very familiar with Celtic music. I'm wondering about the rest of the folks in the band.
Not so much, I don't think. And it's not an area of great strength or knowledge for me either. So I've really enjoyed putting this together. Right. Shelley Loring and Janet Bowler are very well versed in Celtic music, and they'll be featured along with Hans on a trio that just the three of them are going to do.
Gosh, that'll
so
be beautiful.
The concert will have a nice mix of intense things like that piece that you played at the beginning, the fanfare, but then there's also these little quiet, beautiful moments too, and we'll have a nice variety there. I think John Hammond is also going to conduct. He's doing two pieces on the program, and
I do want to mention that later on in this program, I will have one of our Fisher poets is actually from, I think it's Northumberland, and she's going to be speaking in dialect. She actually sings in dialect, so this is interesting that you brought in this. Because reading this, there's no way that it's not like it sort of sounds like it doesn't. We tombed our stoops for the gaudy soldiers.
Right, which is we lifted our glasses, we emptied our glasses for the handsome soldiers, I guess.
Gaudy. Yeah. And so what else? Now, you've got something that says Celtic hymns and dances.
Right, that's the one piece that is not as authentic, and it doesn't use traditional tunes, basically. These others use traditional tunes or something that sound like traditional tunes. But Eric Awazin is a composer that he's been at the Juilliard School for many years. And he's written a piece with original melodies and themes to kind of try to portray the ancient times in these lands. And so it's a very nice, it's a wonderful piece. The band really likes it. Mm-hmm. But it's, as he says, it's got pastoral ballads and heroic fanfares and joyful dances, but they're not traditional ones. They're his own
his own interpretation of the tradition.
And I put that piece in partly just to have a little more variety from harmonic variety, mainly from the more traditional Celtic things. I should say, too, for the audience, just to make sure everybody is okay with this, that there will be, hopefully, a nice mix and balance between the Irish side and the Scottish side. So the thistles and shamrocks right. will be in sync and balance, hopefully, at this.
Boy, you did. Good for you
right.
for doing
well,
that.
Well, I really am trying to be real sensitive right. to this.
So, but what about the last piece, then, Seville or Sevilla Suite?
Right. This is by Bill Whalen, who, mm-hmm. if you don't know his name, but he's the one that wrote Riverdance mm-hmm. and was behind the music behind all of that. And so this is a suite that he wrote originally for orchestra, his first major orchestra work. And this is what established kind of the style and concept of music and dance that he used in Riverdance.
Oh.
So it'll sound a lot like parts of Riverdance.
So you have your dancers lined up?
No, everybody can tap their feet. That's what we're going to do.
Not jump up in the aisle. Okay.
So this is the story of legendary Irish war hero Red Hugh O'Donnell, when he successfully led a rebellion against the English government in 1593. And he subsequently joined forces with Spain, and so that's where the Seville comes in.
I see.
And we're not playing all of it. We're doing three of the seven movements, but it'll give a nice different flavor. And it ends with this wild, wild jig at the end.
It says, why does it say... Oh, I see, because you're skipping parts one and two.
We're just not doing the first two movements.
Three through seven. Yeah.
Yeah.
You got enough, it looks like.
Well, in the interest of time, yeah.
Right. So what brought you to this Celtic traditions idea of doing a concert on this? Was that...
Well, some of our board members were interested in this, and I know there's a big Celtic music scene here and a lot
everywhere.
Of interest
and
everywhere.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, you know, to me that it, too, because in band music, in concert band music, in the last dozen or so years, there's been a huge groundswell of interest from composers. And so where, you know, 20 years ago, you very, very seldom heard anything that sounded kind of even close to authentically Celtic music, mm-hmm. especially with the flute playing. And now it's really common.
Hmm.
And all sorts of, you know, these are some of the best contemporary composers writing for winds. And I mean, they all have, it's easy to find pieces that start out with Celtic introductions or have some kind of theme that way.
I guess it was just the time for it to take
time,
its place.
Time
because the names of the composers don't look very Celtic. Smith, Hazo, Granger.
Right,
Percy Granger.
Giroux. So he's Australian.
Yeah, right.
So.
There's traditional in there. Oh, that's the one that the three flutists are going to be playing. Okay, now let's remind folks, this is at the Liberty on Sunday. The concert begins at 2. Well, not really. The North Coast Symphonic Band begins at 2, but the pre-show is 1:30 with Hans Araki and Carrie Novotny, and you don't want to miss that. So get there before so you can find your seats and enjoy the entire. Hans will be playing wooden flute and Carrie on guitar. And
and Hans on shakuhachi, too.
Shakuhachi, okay. That's his... that's his cross-cultural, since his with a name like Hans Araki.
Well, he comes from six generations of traditional Japanese shakuhachi players on his father's side, and
right.
his mother was Irish.
Yeah, there you go.
Fascinating blend.
And so he's picked up both traditions. That's great. And how many folks do you have in your North Coast Symphonic Band?
I think we've got about 45 for this concert.
Are you ever looking for new people?
We are, they're welcome to contact us if they're interested in playing. The personnel changes slightly every concert series we do, and so we're starting a new set in another week with a guest conductor this time.
Mm.
And then I'll be back to do the 4th of July, 3rd of July concert at the Liberty,
right.
4th of July in
Cannon
Beach.
So if somebody's interested, where do they go?
They can just contact...
Oh, I see.
That's a good,
actually,
I think it's in the program
here
somewhere.
It says NorthCoastSymphonicBand.org. Is that really
would
happening?
Work. Yep,
okay.
That would work. That
good.
Would work great.
Good.
That
and
would
I
work great.
Think you can probably also call 503-325-2431, and Janet can fill you
right.
in. So, okay, this Sunday, beautiful concert, North Coast Symphonic Band at the Liberty, Celtic Traditions. Fantastic. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you, Carol.
Okay,
thanks for having
Dave Becker
me.
Is my guest. Who is the director and the conductor of the North Coast Symphonic Band. And we're going to give you a little bit of Hans Araki's music right now because there will be some singing as well, Dave said. So we'll give you one of his tunes and then do stay tuned. KMUN, KTCB.
The soonest when the winds began to sing. The corn it ripens fastest when the frosts are settling in. And when a woman tells me that my face she'll soon forget. Oh, before we part, I'll wait a crown she's fain to follow dear. And the snows they melt the soonest when the winds begin to sing. The swallow flies without a thought as long as it is spring. And when spring goes and winter blows, my love, then you'll be fain for all your pride to follow me across the raging wind. And the snows, they melt the soonest when the winds begin to sing. And the bee that flew when summer shone in winter cannot sting. I've seen a woman's anger melt between the night and the morn. So it's surely not a harder thing to melt a woman's scorn. Farewell here, no farewell I'll see. For you will lie with me, my love, then kiss and take your leave. And I'll wait here till the moorcock calls and the martin takes the wing. For the snows they melt the soonest when the winds began to sing. For the snows they melt the soonest when the winds began to sing.
Oh yeah, the winds began to sail, and that was Hans Araki, and again he will be with Carrie Novotny doing the pre-show at 1:30 at the Liberty on Sunday, and then the North Coast Symphonic Band will be playing, and Hans and Janet and Shelley will be doing a trio during the concert. Should be great fun, Celtic traditions. Well, right now I'm going from Celtic traditions to a whole nother world, and that is the world of art. And this particular show is happening in Cannon Beach, and it is opening tonight. And I was lucky enough to get a look at some of the work. I didn't see it on the walls, but I see it in a book. And interestingly enough, and she didn't even know about Fisher Poets, the name of this book is Mysteries in the Water, Venice. I just love that you did this. Anila Fazal is my guest, and did I do it okay?
Yes.
All right.
Yes, you said it right.
Okay. and also, I have Elaine Murdy here from the Cannon Beach History Center and Museum. So welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. Now, this Cannon Beach History Center and Museum is one of the hidden secrets. Am I right? A lot of people...
Absolutely.
A lot of people aren't even familiar that this place exists, and it is a wonderful space, and they have a terrific exhibit all the time, and then they have special shows coming in. And Anila, I understand, is the first non-textile artist.
Yes.
That you're featuring. What happened? Did you just get, you couldn't handle it? You couldn't say no to this gorgeous stuff.
Yes. Well, Anila and I were talking, I believe we met at Cannon Beach Arts Association event. I do some volunteering there, and we got to talking, and one of the things that we're doing at the museum now is really looking ahead. That's kind of 2014 for us. Mm. And part of that is doing something we've never done before, which is a art show like this. And Anila's show, Brushworks, is really the first show we've had that isn't fabric or, you know, historic photos. Mm-hmm. So this is a really new realm for us, and we're really excited.
So you're helping them with the transition, Anila.
Yes.
That's very, very kind of you.
And I would like to add, so what's really interesting how the museum's history and how they've usually had textile arts transitions into my art show. The story is really interesting, and many people may not know that by profession, I'm a textile designer.
Oh, how funny.
And I did my undergrad and master's in textiles from Pakistan. And
okay, so, you know, now that you brought it up, let's go back a little bit further. Because hearing you speak, one would presume you've been here almost all your life, but with a you grew up somewhere else because
right.
you have a slight accent.
Right.
So when you did your college work, though, in Pakistan?
Or? Yes, yes. So I grew up in Pakistan, and when it was time for me to choose a major, I decided to do textile design. The reason being that textiles is it's a very important export for Pakistan. And I always had this dream that I want to be a world-famous textile designer.
Mm-hmm.
But what was interesting is that throughout my life, art was very much a part of my life. And yet I never considered myself as an artist. I feel that it's chosen me many times in my life. Mm. And many times it's rescued me in times of sorrow or when I was sad or isolated. So after finishing my master's, I actually got married, and that was the time when I moved to the U.S., which was like 18 years ago.
Uh-huh.
So I've lived in this country for 18 years.
You're a lot older than you look, Anila.
Yes, I am. Yes. I just gave away my age.
Well, you're just
right.
On. Let's see. She was in college and graduate school. 18 years. Yeah. So did you grow up in the city then, I'm presuming?
Yes, yes. I grew up in Pakistan in a city called Karachi.
Yeah, I think we've heard
yes,
of that.
And,
yeah.
And they have a lot of art and culture in the city.
Yeah.
And actually, my mother, from a very early age, and really encouraged my interest in art. And I remember as a 10-year-old going to these art contests happening around the city. And I had very humble beginnings. And really, even before I had access to canvas, I would just like pick up stones and start painting on them. And it was like that need to create, which was very important. And like I told you, and many times it was like calling for me. And so that need has been there my whole life.
And what I see in your work, in your paintings now,
right.
is very bold and exciting colors.
Yes.
Now, was that happening with the textiles as well, or has that moved
no,
and changed?
No, that's a completely different thing, and I think I've always kept these two separate.
Mm.
And as a profession, I'm a product developer. I work for Nike, and I develop professional athlete apparel.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the other side of me.
Yeah,
and,
I guess.
And as you can see...
Do they let you use colors like this?
Absolutely.
All
yes.
right.
We go crazy in tournaments, so you can see that. Well, what's really interesting is that in many ways, I got really lucky that I am working for a company that really promotes my interest in the arts. And so I've had a lot of success in the past 3 years, I would say. And all my life, I painted as a hobby, mm-hmm. according to me. And you know how, as artists, we create all our lives, but we need a certain kind of validation.
Mm-hmm.
Because the people who love you, part of your family, your friends, they would always tell you. Like my husband would always tell me, well, I always told you that your art was nice, honey.
Yes.
You never believed me.
Right.
So to me, it's like to grow as an artist, it's very important to get that validation from people who have no clue who you
mm-hmm.
are.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's real critique.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. I feel that was really inspiring to me. And the colors that I use, I feel like I'm a very positive person.
Well, you're wearing, I might add, rather bold color,
right,
too. You
right,
look fabulous.
On most days, I'm wearing mm-hmm. very bold colors. And I like a lot of jewelry. And mm-hmm. I love the arts. And not just painting. I do things in a very aesthetically pleasing way. That's what I like to do. Like, even if I'm setting up the dinner table, it has to be colorful. So everything has to be colorful. My journey in art, I feel like it has evolved over the years. And I paint what I see in this world.
Yeah. And tell us about that, because I was reading it in the beginning of this book.
Sure.
And I found it interesting. Oh, I just love this. This is just gorgeous. Well, it says the music of colors in Italy. Okay. And... new and expressive compositions, and some of the beauty found in nature.
Right.
And also pears. Where did that
right.
come in?
Right. So I've actually always found pears
and
to
birds,
be
but pears.
Very artistic. Mm. To me, the shape of pears, it's just the angular shape is very artistic. To me, it seems like a human body.
Mm-hmm.
It's beautiful.
A woman's body, especially.
And I know many people might not agree with me, but I find that pears are the most artistic fruit out there. And that's why I have always painted pears, and I don't think I'll ever switch to any other fruit.
Well, I want to...
no apples for me in the future.
I want to send this out to our good friend Mushi,
uh-huh.
who is a KMUN programmer, former programmer, and a painter.
Yes.
And pears are her favorite, too.
See, there you
so
go.
So there you go. We got a
nice.
Club here going.
Yes.
So let's remind folks now that your work, and I understand also you were showcasing in Spain with the Global Art Agency in Spain.
Yes.
So give us a quickie on that.
Sure.
What's that about?
Sure. So that was an interesting happening. So the very first time that I actually applied to an international show was happening in Barcelona. And it was a really tough competition, and I was actually selected. I was one of five artists in the U.S., and in total, there were 122 people selected, and
wow.
from 45 countries.
Ooh,
and
wow.
and the day that I applied, I thought to myself that there's no way I would be selected. However, I like taking risks in life. I love stepping out of my comfort zone, so I applied anyway. So to my disbelief, I got selected, and I traveled to Barcelona, and it was just an amazing experience. And of course, I took, I think four of the paintings that I took with me were pears.
Okay.
And another thing that's interesting is when I'm painting pears, they're not just pears to me. They always have a human connotation behind it because I paint experiences and feelings and emotions. So if it's a set of two pairs, to me, it's two friends, soulmates, siblings. So that's what I feel in my inner world. And
would they be recognizable?
They would be.
As pairs?
They would be. They certainly would be. Now, oftentimes my husband teases me and says, honey, can I move that apple painting from here to the other room? And I have been very offended by that remark, and I think he's really enjoying that.
Of course, of course. Yes. A little teasing there.
Right.
And you have Dance With Me. Yeah, you've got some glorious pieces here. So I want folks to know how long, and maybe Elaine, you can tell us, how does the show work?
The show will be on display through May.
Through May.
Yeah, so you have plenty of time to come see it. We're open 1 to 5, Thursday through Monday. Those hours will change after spring break. So probably, you know, in April, we'll start doing 11 to 5. Mm-hmm. But just to keep it easy, simple, it's 1 to 5, Thursday through Monday, closed Tuesdays and Wednesdays. And you can come see the show. And her pieces are available to purchase if people would like to, with the portion of the proceeds benefiting the History Center. So you're doing getting some fabulous art, and you're supporting
you
a great nonprofit.
Supporting our local
of
arts
course.
Organizations. Yeah. Excellent. And tell us where the this hidden treasure of the Cannon Beach History Center and Museum is.
We are located on the second exit to Cannon Beach Sunset Boulevard, right across from the Cannon Beach Fire Station. So you just get right off the exit. We're on your immediate right. And we just had our sign put back up, but we lost it in the windstorm.
I was wondering about that.
So that is up today, and it's slightly just a smidge taller, so you can actually see it better from the road.
Okay, yeah. That sounds good. Is there a contact number or place for the History Center? And then I'm going to ask you as well, Anila.
Yes, you can go to our website, which is www.cbhistory.org.
Okay.
We also have Facebook, and you can reach us by phone at 503-436-9301.
Okay.
And if you have questions.
That's great. And tonight is the opening. It's at 7:30 p.m. Are you having music, did I hear? Or?
We were going to have music, but we have had such a positive response from her for her show, and we have very limited space at the museum, so we are just doing some background music, food, and we have wine donated by Walnut City Wine Works.
Excellent.
Tonight.
Okay, now Anila, is there, do you have a website? Or,
I do.
Okay,
I do.
What would
that
be?
It's simple. It's my first name, last name, AnilaFazel.com.
And that's AnilaFazel.com.
Correct.
Oh, that is easy. Okay.
And then, of course, you can email me anytime at art@anilafazel.com.
Okay.
And you can ask my lovely friend, Elaine, any questions.
Wonderful. Well, congratulations
Thank
on
you.
The show.
Thank
I look
you.
For. I'm so glad it's up till May because I can't make it tonight, but I will get there. And I'm delighted to meet you.
Same here.
And thank you so much for bringing your gorgeous work here
to
Cannon Beach.
Thanks for having us
you
on.
You bet.
Thank
okay.
you.
Take care. Anila Fazel and Elaine Murdy from the Cannon Beach History Center and Museum. The opening is tonight for Anila's show. Have a little quick sound on Patrick Lamb, who's going to be apparently at the Raymond Theater this Sunday. And then Fisher Poets coming in. We'll be right back. Well, with Patrick Lamb in the background, I just want to let you know, tonight is the opening for the Astor Street Opry Company with the adventures of Beatrix Potter and her friends. A big mazel tov to everyone who's in it, especially littlest one, that'd be Sahaley. And you can call them 325-6104 with a 503 in front. Seaside Jazz Festival is a happening thing, guys. It's all weekend. Get to your computers, jazzseaside.com. Just head over to Seaside if you're really close and go to the convention center. Three venues there and two others in the area. We're going to be coming back to the Fisher Poets. Imogen Gallery, well, we're coming back to that too. Coaster Theater, this is the last weekend, 7:30 Friday and Saturday. A Doll's House, Ibsen's A Doll's House, and that's 7:30 Friday and Saturday. And then they have auditions on Saturday at 1 p.m. at the theater for 12th night. And on Sunday, there are auditions for The Boys Next Door, which is directed by Karen Bain. Go for it, folks. She's a fabulous director. 2 o'clock on Sunday and Monday at 6:30. And these are at the bank across from the theater. So you got to find your way around there. Jackson Andrews and Dave Quentin, the Sweet Basils tonight. Lee Stromquist Group is at the Living Room tonight and tomorrow night. And then Wes Warmond is there on Sunday at noon. All fabulous musicians. Are we lucky or what? Sandtrap is featuring Peter Pants. Very cute. But who are they? Jazzy and Turtle Vandemar, yeah, and David Reich, Hillbilly Jazz, right here. It's tonight, though, along with everything else. Sarah Jackson Holman at The Adrift. The Adrift has lots of music all week, almost every night. And there's an art show at the Seaside Jazz Festival as well. Troll Radio Review tomorrow morning. We're doing a special for Fisher Poets. 11 o'clock, it's upstairs at the Fort George. And just come on over and enjoy it. Ham Radio, 9 to 4 at Towler 306. Bring what you have. Learn what you don't know. The Two-Step Striders, that's Elizabeth Christina and Lauren Schulte, 5 o'clock at the Peninsula Performing Arts Center in Long Beach. And The Singing Revolution, that's Estonia, 11 a.m. at the Apollo Archives in Nacelle. It's a film, political, of course. Southwester, Shelley Short, and she'll be on Crossroads tomorrow at between noon and 2. Clam Shack Bonanza, that's Prick in the Burn. What did I write? Can I read my writing? No More Parachutes and Binges with Syringes. That's 7 o'clock Saturday night at 271st Street and Sandridge, the Clam Shack. And the Liberty, of course, has Judy Collins and Don McLean. It is sold out, but if you want to go over to the box office or give them a call and put your name on the waiting list, this is all tomorrow night at 7:30. And the number is 325-5922, extension 55. Sunday, North Coast Symphonic Band, you just heard it, going to be great. Coaster auditions, we talked about Peninsula Players, annual meeting, Fort George, Little Smokies, Patrick Lamb at the Raymond. Democrats are meeting on Monday, and that's it. Okay, we are moving right into the Fisher Poets, and I have three live ones here. Two poets, one photographer, two BBC people, I'm not quite sure how, and I only have three people here, so they're mixed up, or I'm mixed up. I heard some fabulous stuff last night, and I saw some fabulous stuff just now at a gallery that is having an opening. The mics are all live now. Oh, look it, I've got some professionals here. They even put their headphones on. And one of my guests is Corey Arnold, who's actually a Fisher photographer, and he, together with his friend Martin Machado, who is a Fisher painter, are showing at Imogen Gallery, which is on 11th and Marine Drive. And they have an opening today, right after this show, from 4 till 7 p.m. It's kind of kicking off the Fisher Poets weekend, although the bookshop I've got Clam Shack on my mind instead of the other, is open on 14th Street, where you can get your buttons and your fabulous t-shirts and look over the silent auction and all that kind of good stuff. So welcome, Corey.
Hi.
Corey, where did you just get in from? I know you just got in today, right?
Yeah, I just got in from Dutch Harbor, Alaska. I was just cruising around for a month on different boats, shooting some stuff for Alaska Seafood Marketing. They kind of sent me up there. So.
Oh, out of where are they?
They're out of Alaska. It's a state organization that helps promote Alaskan seafood. So they've been kind of supporting me on these journeys to document fishing industry up there when I'm not actually fishing myself.
Are you doing videos on that or stills or both?
Mostly stills, but a little bit of video now.
Okay, because I saw your stills over... I saw your stills and Martin's stills, and then somebody has a video going or a slideshow. What's that?
Oh, that's Marty's. That's from his Merchant Marine life on freighters.
Okay, folks, the postcard I'm holding in my hand of Corey's work, two of his pieces and one of Martin Machado, just stunning. Slack Water and Icy Bow. And you can see the real thing at the gallery. Now I want to introduce my other guests, and then I want all three of you to feel free to interrupt each other, butt in, add, subtract, however you want to do it. So I have Katrina Porteous. Is that how you say your name?
That's just right, Carol, yes. Hi.
And you can see that she's part of my international show today. And with her is Julian May. Hi, Julian.
Hello. Yeah, that's how you say it.
Yours is really tough, yeah. You can tell. And Katrina gave us a poem last night, as did Julian. What is the story? What are you guys doing here besides telling fabulous poetry?
Well, I'm a radio producer working for the BBC. I make documentaries. And whenever I can, whenever they let me, I go out and do things on boats and to do with fishing and things like that. So I've made a program for the BBC about the fisheries broadcast in Newfoundland, longest running daily program on radio in the world, I believe, and where they broadcast. And the whole place seems to stop. I was in a bank at 5 o'clock and everyone stopped and listened to the fisheries broadcast, all this news about fishing, which was great. So
I'm going to have to send that one out to Carol and Rick in Boudelier's Point, because we all went up to Newfoundland
just
a few years ago, but I think I missed it. I'll have to go back.
Well, it's
so you did a documentary.
So we did, and I've done, and Katrina is a poet, you know, living in this fishing village in Northumberland, and we've done a lot of work together over about, I don't know, 20 years.
Yes, or nearly that long.
So
now you don't live in the North Country.
I live in Greenwich in London. I work in London, but I come from the very far southwest from Cornwall, which is a big fishing place.
Right. And Katrina, where do you come from originally?
Originally, I was born in Aberdeen in Scotland, which is a big fishing place.
Well, you know, I don't know whether you heard the beginning of the show. I had the North Coast Symphonic Band is doing a concert called Celtic Traditions, and we had some pieces, and it was written in... And I said, oh, too bad Katrina's not here, because she could read that stuff and pronounce
it. I probably couldn't. I don't have a Scottish accent at all, because I grew up in England and I ended up right on the border between England and Scotland, on the East Coast in the place where my grandparents lived, called Beadnall.
Beadnall. Okay. Now, would you mind if I prevailed upon you to give us a little of what we got last night? Now, Corey hasn't heard this either, but last night was the kickoff for the Fisher Poets themselves, and I kind of snuck in. And over at Clemente's, they put together a fabulous dinner. I don't know how they do it with all of us there. And then we are treated to... it's kind of an open mic, basically. Folks sign up. So when Katrina opened her mouth, however, it came out a little different from the rest of the people. So could you give us a hit of that, please?
I certainly can. This is in Northumbrian dialect, which sadly is spoken less and less. But there are still fishermen around who do speak in this dialect, and it's a very old way of speaking. So this is a part of a long poem, and it's a description of the things you can find in a fisherman's hut. Which is no to forget the forgarishan found in a fisherman's hut. You'd say it could You'd say it could dee wi' a right read up. With pellets and duckers and pickets and poys, swools and sweels and bows for boys, rowels and bolts and barky sneeds, the table are clayed with perrins of threed. Were hoppins and hingins that's toozled like tows, and pokes for the hullocks and bundles of scalbs, and clutes for a dopper the caldies are chowed. But hey, look out, divin gan in there, you'll never get loused, cos she's Wizenbank fair. It a' tumbles out in the rusty shore. The nets unraffle with crudes of store. You've a nice scumfish afore you can call for the becket, the brailer, the ripper, and a' the whoppins and leashins are back of the war. By lad, she's a right taggerine man's hall.
Okay, so Corey, you're a fisherman. What'd she say?
Yeah, I was trying to lip read. I thought maybe that would help, but that wasn't helping
it,
either.
It didn't help, did it? No, I know. I was sitting right in front, and I thought, well, you know, you can sort of, you know, all those words that are sort of the same. Not. So, and you said it right, though, last night. You said it's really music. The poetry is really music, so even if we don't understand the words, the feeling. And I have to add that last night, since you weren't sitting in a studio, you were actually dancing as you gave it to her. Wasn't that true, Julian?
True, true.
She is poetry in motion, as we say. So
I think one of the attractions to poets for of fishing and the fishing industry is the language of it. Where I come from in Cornwall, people have interesting words for different bits of gear. For instance, they call a certain kind of crab pot, crab trap, you call a nanty, and that's because these first came from Nantes in France, the town of Nantes. That's where they were made, so they always call them nanties. You know, and they call in St. Maur's in Cornwall, they call spider crabs Grandfather Edwards, because there was this old sort of bent over old man who used to go down to the quay a bit like a kind of spider crab, and so they always call that. And so the language of fishing is it's really good for poets.
Now,
I think.
Did you have to research what some of these? In other words, when you talk about nanties coming from Nantes. Most of the people there probably just use the word. They may not know the origin. Am I right?
Yeah, I think that
at this point, if it's been used for 100 years,
I think people now wouldn't connect that. But it's just a kind of pop, you know. But you know, I think that's very interesting. I mean, Cornwall is a. I mean, people from Cornwall don't actually think they're English. No, actually, hardly anyone in England thinks they're English. But Cornwall has always been, it's like Scotland and Wales, and it's a kind of Celtic place. And it had its own language, which was very much like Welsh and Breton. And
so it's a Gaelic.
Gaelic family. And one of the things that's interesting about it is that the names of rocks and things like that are often from the Cornish language. Like at the end of the Lizard Peninsula, there are these very dangerous rocks called the Manacles, and they come up out of the water, and if you go a ship on there, you can't get off. You're manacled to it. But actually, it's a transliteration from the Cornish main, which means rock, and eglos means like eglise in French, church. So these are rocks by the church. Main eglos. But Manacles is much better.
Absolutely,
you know?
Absolutely.
So that's very interesting.
Last night, I think it was John Campbell, who is from Block Island. Was it he? Oh, it wasn't you. No, it was he who was talking about the names of places. Was that he? Or somebody was, and they gave all these Native American names.
Oh, yes, yeah.
And that was fascinating, too, which I'm thinking in Alaska. You must have a whole vocabulary there. I'm not sure. What part of Alaska?
As far as fishing terms?
Yeah, and as far as there are different populations living there, and so they...
I can't necessarily speak to that, but I know, I mean, I crabbed for quite a while, and a lot of the big industry you find in the Bering Sea is not so related. It's a bit different, but yeah.
When you're up there... How can I put this, Grace, sort of Grace? Your day job, the one that pays your bills, is that fishing or filming or both?
It's probably 50-50. I mean, for a long time I was I started off in Bristol Bay, and that was kind of a summer job. It helped me through college, and I went to help pay for photography school. And then when I graduated from school, then I had time during the rest of the year to get a winter job and make more money in fishing. So I started crabbing and then used that money to buy all my equipment. And then as I photographed fishing more and more, I started selling my photos, and now it's somehow 50-50.
So did you, and where did you grow up?
I grew up in Southern California.
I can tell from the way you're speaking. He's the only one in this entire day who has no accent, so you know he must be a Californian. But were you interested in photography as a child, or in fishing, or where did all that come from?
Well, I've got pictures of myself in diapers and a pair of sunglasses and diapers holding up a little bluegill when I was like 2 years old. Or I don't know. Was I still in diapers? And maybe I was one. I don't know.
Oh, wow.
But
with someone in your family?
Yeah, my dad. My dad was kind of fish obsessed. So it was all at that time fishing with a rod and reel. And every weekend we would go out in the ocean, you know, 20-foot boat, fish for tuna, Dorado, yellowtail, stuff like that. So I was always bringing these really bizarre sea creatures to class for show and tell. And it was like, you know, it was always a big hit, you know? So I kind of had this identity of being a fisherman. And so I started to just seek out, you know, faraway places to start fishing.
Did you go to film school, though, at some point during this?
I went to photography school, in college. I didn't know that's what I was going to do. I was thinking I wanted to do something in fisheries, you know, management or whatever. But when I was 19, I went up to Alaska and found a commercial fishing job, and I was hooked at that point.
Well, okay, now I'm going to send this part. I'm going to send Corey's testimony out to my beloved Stephanie, because she also combines cinematography with fishing. Fished for years in Alaska and now works for Wyoming Public Radio, TV, doing production with film. So you know, these people who put their lives together this way. And Katrina, I don't know about you. He's got the BBC gig. That's an official job. What's your story? Have you been a poet all your life? Did you?
I'm afraid, much to my parents' disappointment, I have.
I see.
No, I'm just joking. I have. Tried to make a living as a poet for a long time, but it's as you can imagine, it's not really a living. It's a vocation.
Well, I don't know. The day jobs often just support the loves in our lives. So, the poetry. But you've been living up in this fabulous part of the world for, I think you said 35 years.
No, 25
years.
Yeah, but slightly more than that now. But yeah. And when I first went to live there, I got to know the fishermen there. There were more fishermen in those days. I mean, one of the things about English fishing is that it's gone through some very, very hard times for the last generation or so.
Because environmental stuff?
Oh, long, complicated political story. But a lot of it is to do with the European Union.
Aha. Okay, say no more.
I'll say no more about that, but I will say that the people who probably suffered the most are the people who do the least damage, and that's the small boat fishermen, the inshore fishermen, who have fished essentially sustainably forever, because it's in their interest to do so. You know, they want the fish to be there for the next generation and the generation after that, and they're just small guys, and they don't overfish. And, of course, they're the first people to suffer.
It's been true
in my village.
Well, it sounds quite familiar with fishing and also with farming, the small, you know, self-sustaining.
Yes.
So are you staying in that? And I heard, how do you pronounce where you live?
Beadnell,
but what's the north?
Northumberland.
Northumberland. So Thumbelina, Northumberland. Okay. And is that where you plan to stay?
I expect so, yes. I mean, I feel very attached to the place and to the community, although I have to say it is a dwindling community now. But yes, I do. And I also feel a responsibility, because a huge amount was given to me by those old fishermen. And they were mostly men. I learned a lot from the women as well, but it was hanging around the boats and the huts and you know, going out to sea just for days at a time and just listening to them. They gave me so much. And I feel a responsibility to kind of be embedded in that community and somehow try to give something back and to pass it on in some way. I mean, you can't pass it on when you're not living the life, but to somehow pass something on. Because it's their spirit. It's, you know, it's what they were about. It's not just the job. It's the whole relationship to one another and to the place.
I think you're passing it on right now very effectively, and considering that I believe you're the first... you and Julian are the first international people, since Alaska is part of the United States officially. otherwise, we'd have a lot. I believe you're the first international people. So I think everybody is thrilled that you're here and thrilled to hear your stories and learn a lot. Folks, the way you're going to learn a lot from my three guests, first of all, Corey's exhibit is beginning in 3 minutes. And we'll it's not too far away, though. Imogen is on 11th and Marine Drive, and it's a fabulous exhibit, and you there is no cost to go in. Just go ahead in there. Anybody can go in. For the Fisher Poets Gathering, we ask that you buy a button. I say we because KMUN is the nonprofit sponsor overlooking the and proud of it, the Fisher Poets Gathering. So get yourself a button at one of the venues. There are 6 or 7 venues in town. Get yourself a Coast Weekend. Open it up and see what they are. Fort George, the Wet Dog, the Voodoo Room, Kala, the Events Center, from which KMUN is going to be. Coast Community Radio is broadcasting tonight and tomorrow night from 6 to 10. Maritime Museum, Brett Vandenhoevel from Columbia Riverkeeper will be there tomorrow morning, along with Alexa Wiley, who was on my show last week. And anywhere in town, just watch where people are going and follow them and get yourself a button and just soak it in. Soak it in. It's fabulous stuff. There's a lot of humor, laughter, poignancy, tears, hugging, and getting to know one another, and reunions. It's a fabulous time for everybody. If you're in the South County, head over to the Seaside Jazz Festival in over at the... what's that building called? You know, the big building where everything happens. I've run out of language, folks. That's all there is. It is time for me to move on. I'm going to...
Well, I worked all my life in the cannery shed, and if I am dying or you think I'm dead, don't bury my bones, just put them instead in a can in the cannery shed. The cannery shed perches over the river. When the winter winds blow, you'll freeze and you'll shiver. When the boss comes around, you might have to give her my opinion of the cannery shed.
There's okay, no that's Mo Bowster, and I just had to have her in here because we love her dearly. And it's with Mary Garvey's song, our own Mary Garvey, who lives right here across the river on the Washington side. Thanks so much for being here.